I talk to a spirit. She comes in my dreams.
What is the path to awakening supposed to look like, to feel like? How do you know if you are on it? We ask these very sacred and sometimes vulnerable questions to many different women from all walks of life. A conversation that needs to be shared and heard. I'm Jo Hendy.
I'm Amanda Parker.
And welcome to the Girl Awakening Podcast.
Good morning, Amanda.
Good morning, Jo.
Here we are, another special, special day with an amazing guest.
Oh, yes. Taking us to places we've been longing to go for quite some time now.
Yeah. You've got me already.
Yeah. We're going to dive in because this beautiful lady has a lot to share with us today. So we're welcoming Isara as an awakened spiritual teacher of Australian Indigenous heritage who brings the idea of holistic awakening to people around the world. Isara, known in Indigenous culture as Auntie Jintimirin Ningali, is an elder of Mirnin, Ajamatna heritage, with kin ties to Pitjantjatjara and Yakunjara country. She also has a mixed heritage of Scottish, Welsh, and Spanish background, truly a very global soul. Yes. Isara is also ordained by His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and she integrates the wisdom teachings from Eastern spiritual traditions, her Australian Indigenous heritage, and the profound transformative experiences of her own life. As a wisdom keeper and spiritual leader, Isara's innate knowledge and personal enlightenment brings rare clarity and unconditional love to the challenges we all face. Welcome, dear Isara. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much. It's beautiful to be here with you, ladies and listeners.
We are so honored to have you in the space, and we know that we're gonna travel places today with you. As I'm sure that you have in your own awakening journey, and we can't wait to hear, to share, and to learn a lot of wisdom through you today. So thank you so much for coming in and joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we've jumped straight in to the question, Isara. How did your awakening begin?
Does it even have a beginning? I mean, it begs the question, where do we start and where do we finish? Even as an infant, I had this incredibly acute connection with everything. I was very connected in the light field. So I was able to see and experience things that were multidimensional. And I was also aware of transition through lifetimes. So there was this little smidgen of confusion of, did I take a wrong turn? Did I come in at the wrong time and the wrong place? What's happened?
Yeah.
It just, something weird had shifted or happened that didn't quite align with or match existence and creation as I understood it or knew it. And so even from a very young age, I had this intense inquiry. I really wanted to understand, what was this dissonance? What was somehow, you know, out of place, disjointed? And as I continued to grow, I started to realize that, oh, wow, maybe I really am the odd one out. People thought I was completely crazy because I would talk to things people couldn't see and I was experiencing things that other people thought were very unreal. And so for a passage, I did really question my own sanity because it seemed like no one else was seeing and experiencing the world in the way I was. And then increasingly the amount of conflict and trauma and abuse around me pushed me deeper and deeper into inquiry. So I recall very deliberately, even at the age of 6, 7, exploring shifts of consciousness and wanting to understand how it was that I could experience all of this connectedness, and what was it compared to the conflict that was going on around me. So I wouldn't say it was a singular event of awakening. I think because for some reason it, you know, I feel incredibly blessed that I came in very, very deeply connected. And in my formative years, that was a blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
It was my saving's grace, because if it had not been for that, having undergone the amount of abuse and trauma that I did, I probably would not have survived. I probably would not have chosen to even continue living. It was my connectedness to the infinite, eternal, and spirit and all these other realms that supported me when I did not have that clear, connected understanding amongst people and family around me. So I had nature, I had spirit, I had my ancestors. So I had guidance on many other levels from a young age.
Wow, that's so beautiful. I know that, you know, other women that share their journey mention a lot about having a grandmother or a grandfather or somebody in their world that was different like them, that was able to guide them. Did you have anyone that physical? We know you had lots of ethereal people, but did you have any physical people that you could turn to that understood you, or were you completely on your own? And another quick question too, but probably really doesn't matter, but were you born in Australia? No, you were born overseas? Yeah.
No, I was born on Kaurna country. I grew up on Kaurna country, which is South Australia. And so my ancestry is to the west coast of South Australia. In terms of immediate support at the physical level, no, aside from the occasional interaction with aunties, uncles of other mob, our family was very disconnected in terms of our heritage. But it was when my grandfather passed that things became really interesting. I think I was about 12 years old. And, you know, I'd been the one to constantly try and bring up the fact and the reality of our Aboriginality. And I was always being shut down. And so eventually I learned to go quiet. When my grandfather passed over, we're at the funeral, and all of a sudden his spirit just rose up in front of me and was just radiant and beaming at me. And I started laughing. So it was like, well, right, well, see, there he is. We don't need to worry about death, you know. It's all just one continuum of life. And of course, well, that riled the family even more, because there I am laughing in the middle of a funeral. But he then became very actively guiding me, directing me as to how to rebuild the bridges of our heritage and reconnect with other relations, etc. And over a number of years, as I started to pursue that, you know, becoming a young adult as well, it turned out that everything he guided me to was 100% accurate, that to the point that the messages and the singing I had been receiving from him and my ancestors were proven to be 100% our language.
Oh, wow. Gosh, that's quite you can't get any more of an affirmation of who you are and what you've been experiencing than that. That's quite sensational.
Yeah. The reason for my question was because we know that we have soul family that come through. They may not look like soul family in the physical, but as you just expressed, your grandfather was definitely part of your soul family.
Without a doubt. Mm. Yeah.
Beautiful. Can I just ask, sorry to ask before we leave your beautiful grandfather, was he in resistance to this knowledge while he was alive?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's on both sides of the family. And, you know, to the point that even my grandmother, who was adamant about, you know, the non-fact of our Indigenous heritage, she confessed to my uncle a few years before she passed. And then my uncle kept it, all of the information, a secret. It was just crazy. And this is the extent of pain and suppression that occurred for our people.
Yeah.
And the transference of the trauma and the conflicts as a result of it is, you know, everyone's still working through that.
Yeah. Why do you think that was? Sorry to go off track, but why do you think that was?
No, that's so relevant, isn't it?
In my family or in general? Well, in my family, shame, fear, for ostracizing, you know, being ostracized, being maltreated, etc. So my great grandmother was stolen from her country, put into a mission, taken by the Giles expedition, and had other children up in Central Australia, hence our kin ties to Pitjantjatjara, Yuggera country as well. And that's deep trauma history. So survival depended on maintaining a code of secrecy and denying and rejecting one's Indigenous heritage, because it meant that it provided greater safety, greater opportunities, greater respect, etc. When really that was a facade, because you can't, you know, you can't divorce yourself from your DNA or your spirit, let alone what's going on genetically and all of that culture. I've come to really understand my way of thinking, my brain, my whole psyche is completely different to the average westernized person, albeit I've got mixed blood, but the way I think is still very, very Indigenous. The way I feel, the way I see life is very Indigenous. And it is a complete clash of cultures. It's a total disregard for our natural laws and our natural self to live the way we're living now.
Oh, I'm so, great. To hear that and you said it so beautifully. And yeah, there's so much to honor, and there's so much to learn through all of what you've just said. Yeah.
Yeah.
Simply, so, even just as a, you know, the average person on the street, to honor every moment of what you just said, let alone the pivotal times that we're in, making it like a hot seat that we're all sitting in.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel the reason it is relevant to every single person, and I think this is a really important point for us to dive into, because a lot of people feel, oh, well, Indigenous and Aboriginal and, oh, yeah, well, that's historical, and, oh, well, what relevance does that have to me other than, oh, well, we should be more tolerant and we should overcome racism and blah, blah, blah. No, it is utterly relevant to every single one of us for our well-being, for sustainability, for connectivity. We know that mental health is contingent on the level of our connection with ourself, with family, and our environment. It's all about the environment that we are operating in. And you cannot get an example of something more connected than Indigenous cultures and society. If we look back into ourselves and, you know, every single person on the planet, we'll find all of our ancestors were Indigenous. We all lived as earth children in harmony, in accord with the natural laws. Did our rituals differ? Absolutely, of course. Did the way we frame it vary? Absolutely. That diversity, of course, is beautiful and wondrous. However, there are such deep core similarities and principles that underpinned the way we lived. Every single human on the planet lived in a way that was sustainable until we disconnected from nature, until we were dispossessed. And it's at that point that the mental health epidemic began.
Oh, wow.
We're trying to draw a circle around all the, you know, the chaos going on now in the world. But let's dig down into it and look at the root causes of it. And we'll see it's all about disconnection and malalignment. And it's even bigger than just that singular topic that revolves around awakening and enlightenment. It's even bigger than just, well, I'm disconnected from myself. I'm disconnected from, you know, the numinous idea of creation. We are disconnected from the entire fabric of creation. That is our shared grief on this planet. That is our shared conflict, and that is what we need to address. And exactly why Indigenous heritage and culture is absolutely of value, a treasure trove for every single person on this planet.
Oh.
Especially those who want to awaken.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we should just cut that excerpt and put it up there with Martin Luther King, I Had a Dream, because that just, yeah. Very powerful. Oh.
Yeah.
But I think if we put it in simple terms, even like a science aspect of what you just said, like for people who don't want to acknowledge any of the soul essence, the soul, the Satnam, the truth of what you just shared, if we look at the water we have on the earth is the water we have on earth. We don't make new water. We continually are recycling water. And when we go back to what you said about we were all earth children, we have all been Indigenous. We have all been First Nations people of this sacred land. So we are just constantly abusing, ignoring, and disconnecting from ourselves.
Right. And then, yes, to pick up on your point of the scientific premise, all the laws that Indigenous people live by, they are empirical laws. They're not abstract laws. They are laws proven true by existence for eon upon eon upon eon. So when we look at that alongside of science, we see that this is not some, you know, abstract philosophical notion, that everything is interconnected and interdependent. That is a fact. We cannot take anything in existence into account without taking everything in existence into account. And that relationship, that conscious relationship, is what knits our psyche back together. It's the very thing that restores our spirit, our soul, between physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual, not just as this individual, but as a collective, between each other, with the kin ties with every living being, with Mother Earth herself, with the great spirit of all creation, and with the cosmic laws. That's what ties it back together, is that everything is interconnected. That is scientific. So if we look at those principles, what we find remarkably is that our ancestors were living an awakened existence, and that most of our hopes and ideals for awakening now are still somewhat siloed. It's a very narrow track that most people are pursuing in the effort to become awakened. Whereas if we restore these fundamental principles and rebuild these connections based on these creation laws or fundamental principles, we can't help but be more awake. Connectivity is the very source of awakening.
Wow. That's that feeling of just certainty, the feeling of true fulfillment, and as you said, connected or connectivity. without looking outside of ourselves, kind of thing, and looking for those areas that fulfill us, but they don't really, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In other words, the distractions. You're talking about the distractions where we're looking for, you know, an example of what we're supposed to be outside of ourselves or what's going to fulfill us. Absolutely. And it's all those distractions and substitutes that keep us damped down in terms of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if you have that soil in your hand or under your feet and you connect to that, everything that you're just sharing is in that soil, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, God. Our questions seem so busy. Right now, we've just gone. They really feel very insignificant. But, you know, for our listeners, we will ask them just so you, but we don't want you, we want you to share from that place that you're sharing from, if you could. That would be absolutely beautiful.
The incredible power that's coming from you, Isara, is just part of that switch that the world is craving for.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So we've kind of already touched on this, but we'd love you to take another cut in it. But when did you first notice the shift in your thoughts about the world around you? When you, we know that you're started very young for you, but I'm sure, I'll just hand it over.
Well, it was a sequence of shifts for me, being at school and observing the amount of conflict and abuse that occurred in school, not just in my home or family environment, and realizing how connected I was and yet trying to operate in a really deeply disconnected world. But I think the biggest shift happened, there was a pinnacle event after around the age of 15, I was really struggling with my entire world, the abuse in the family and the suffering and the abuse I was experiencing at school. And I just got to a point where it was enough. I just didn't want to do it anymore. And so I left home and I ended up homeless. And I'd always had these very psychic experiences, so I kept having this recurring dream of being hunted down by someone, and this overwhelming, intense instinct that I was going to be killed, and I was constantly trying to get away. I ended up being picked up by an adult couple, and I thought, oh, well, I'll be safe if I go and stay with them. It ended up that a man was living in the shed in the back of their place, and he took a bit of a liking for me, and the more he pursued me, the more I tried to pull away, the more he pursued me. It resulted in an event one night where the couple were out away, and this man pushed himself on me, tried to push himself on me. My resistance meant he completely snapped, and I was in the dream, in reality. So not only had I been having all these experiences that everyone around me was trying to shut down and say was unreal and I was loopy, but all of a sudden I was encountering the physical alignment between having vivid psychic awareness and dreams and reality itself. And this man was violently, he was trying to kill me, absolutely intent on killing me, raping me, abusing me. And in the midst of that, I realized that if I did not draw on the power of absolute conscious attention, which I'd already been exercising, I'd been exploring it and exercising it, but if I didn't draw on that, I was going to die. And what happened in that instant was I became physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, utterly as real as you and I are sitting here having this conversation. I was everything. I was the body being murdered, the floor, the carpet, the blood on the walls, the floors, the house, the surrounding. I was the man murdering me.
Wow.
The entire thing. And I saw in that instant the reason that soul was doing what he was doing. I experienced his entire being and the degree of disconnection he had from love. He was so denied love, and he was so desperate to get love. And then when he was rejected what he thought was love, he trying to take it from me, he would rather destroy it than be rejected again. That degree of disconnection and suffering just catalyzed in me this realization or this beingness. I can't even put it in words. I was the absolute infinite field of love, just seeing, knowing, experiencing love. And all I could do was pray for this soul, for this man, to know love, to know that he is loved. He is love and lovable. And as I prayed, the entire room lit up. It was full with angels. That man, he dropped to his knees and he looked up and he prayed. He said, "My God, what have I done? I've killed an angel. Oh my God, you have to save her." And he literally picked up my body. And at this point, because of the shift of events, I was expanded so much, the body was slipping. And so he took me to the phone, called emergency, and said, "You have to tell them." It just fell out of my mouth. "He's killing me," and the address. And when he realized, he slammed my head into the wall and he ran. The body, my body, slipped into a coma. I was in this vast state of consciousness. Well, next thing, I'm in the hospital and I'm watching everything. And my parents have been called in, and the body is in this state, and I'm everywhere, everything. I see and experience the entirety of every single incarnation of this soul stream and every being, all of humanity. And I hear the same suffering and conflict reverberating around the entire planet. And I realize that this is what it's about. Every single thing we are experiencing is pivoting on this. Are we connected? Are we the presence of love? Or are we seeking to restore that? Every single incarnation we've ever taken is all about this. And as I saw that and realized it, I went, "Oh, well, I haven't finished what I came here for. I better get back in the body."
Oh, my God.
So I went, "Whoosh." And I slipped back into my body. And, my body was extremely beaten and damaged. And so my entire face was completely swollen, and the eyes, you know, there was almost no eyes. But I blinked them to try and open them. And my father, who was standing at the end of the bed, saw my eyes move. And he looked at me and he burst into tears. And he told me he loved me. For the first time in his life.
Wow.
I lay there knowing I am that. The unborn, the undying, the unbreakable, all existence is this. I felt no resentment to the man who had tried to murder me. I did not feel as a victim. I simply knew the quest, the nature of all of us, and that this is what we're here for. So that, in terms of my human experiences, was probably the most pivotal moment of tying it all together, of understanding, okay, this is what I am experiencing. This is reality. This is what I'm here for. This is what we're all here for. Right, I can get on with it now.
Oh my goodness.
At 15,
yeah,
to have that deep passage into grace and all knowingness, and then to continue on with in that vein, you have certainly been awake right from the very beginning. It's
incredible.
Yes. And it's, you know, it's like an ascended mastery that you're describing. That's really literally the sense that I'm not trying to box you or give you a name or anything like that, but just the essence of what we're feeling from your being.
I want to say in response to that is, whilst that can seem extraordinary, I really want you and everyone to recognize that is who you are, who we are, all of us, and that every act of violation in this world is as a result of the disconnection from love. That love is almighty and all powerful. That is the power that transformed that event. The presence, the potency of that absolute unconditional love, that somehow I was able to be in that state to resonate, embody, to know, to hold that absolute love for the man who was murdering me, was the very thing that woke him up. The murderer became the savior. And we tend to measure ourselves. We quantify everything. I would rather hope we can look more to qualifying. What are the qualities of our being? Don't worry about the quantity, the level, how much. Don't worry about that. What is the quality of you, of me? What is the quality of our experience in every moment? We're all made of the same stuff. We're all consciousness. We're all part of this fabric of creation, and its underlying essence is love. And it's that power that's going to guide us.
Yeah. Thank you. I feel when our listeners hear you share that experience, like we've been sitting here, I feel that in ourselves, you can feel that disconnection, that violation relationship. And I feel it's very,
awakening.
It's
like a wake up.
It's like a DNA. It's a cellular connection. It's like my ears are hearing it, but my body is feeling it on every way. It's a very powerful
frequency. Yeah. It's like a vibration. Yeah.
That's the message of what you're sharing is just screaming to be put in place.
Yeah.
In everyone's hearts. We're probably going to say that 20 times.
20 times. And I'm not even sure where to go next.
Yeah, just keep going.
Let's just keep going. Maybe that question could be really powerful.
I think so.
After that experience, I'm absolutely sure that it was like, bam, you were a different person. You were alive, living, fully ready.
Did you go to your family then? Or just hearing your father say he loved you for the first time, was that allowed? Did that allow us to open up?
Definitely. My family took me back home. It was the beginning of a huge process of healing and transformation and reconciliation. You know, it was big. You know, it wasn't that everything was all of a sudden all, you know, sweet and roses and back into place, but it had fundamentally changed everything, without a doubt. Yeah,
it's funny because a lot of other women, definitely not the same experience, but when they've had an experience where spirit or soul or somebody has come through and spoken to them, they say that from that moment on, they have this certainty within them that's mm-hmm. like almost unwavering connection to source, that now they know and they trust, and that from here on in, it's just a certainty inside of them that mm-hmm. won't unwaver them from anything. Did that happen after that experience for you?
I think what happened with that experience was it integrated it more. I'll share with you a really funny little example of an experience I had even earlier. So when I was staying with my grandmother, we'd stay there occasionally on weekends, and she used to keep sweets in the cupboard. And at that stage, as a child, I had a bit of a sweet tooth. So she these little sugar cubes in a dish. And I asked her before bed, oh, can I have sugar, some biscuit or some lollies or something? No, you've done your teeth. It's time for bed. So anyway, while she's doing something else with my sister, my younger sister, I snuck off into the kitchen and I stole a couple of these little sugar cubes out of the bowl. And I went and I quickly climbed into bed. And I'm lying in bed and I've got the little sugar cubes. And next thing, she comes in and she's going to make sure we're all tucked in. Well, for some reason, she pulled up the sheet to smooth it out before she tucked it in. And she went, she ripped hold of my hand, prized my little fingers open, and there were the sugar cubes that have spilt some crumbs. And she walloped my butt so hard. She spanked me. It stung so badly. I yelped and I cried and I screamed. And off she stormed, left me there in the bed crying and howling. And as I'm crying and howling, I am pure sakshi. I'm pure awareness watching the child crying. I'm awareness. And I'm watching this. The child's having an outright tantrum. And I'm looking and going, yeah, well, you're having a tantrum. And I'm this awareness going, oh, well, doesn't matter what happens. You know, this is the rock. I'm just here. I'm just being unchanged, undisturbed. It was so pure and vivid.
Mm.
It was just like this anchoring of knowing I am that.
Mm.
So when the event of the being nearly murdered happened, sounds crazy to jump from sugar cubes to being nearly murdered, but it was an integration of the I am that as a lived experience. So it's one thing to have an epiphany. It's one thing to enter that as a state of awareness. It's another to embody it entirely, to the point that in the face of a murderer, one remains and is that presence of love and transcendence. So the gift from that was it grounded my knowing of purpose. And that wasn't, I'm going to be a teacher, or oh, I'm going to go off and be an artist, or oh, I'm going to write books. That wasn't purpose. The purpose was be this love, be the absolute unwavering truth of I am this. I am the unborn, the undying. I am the unbreakable. I am this infinite love in every moment. That is the purpose.
Mm. Wow, that is so powerful. And we are literally going to go off track. We're going to scrap the questions.
Yeah.
We are going to scrap the questions, because I just want to go jump into that and say, so where did that take you from there? Like, where did you're now like 15? Are you 15 now?
Nearly 16.
Nearly 16. Yeah. Where did this take you? Where did you go from here?
Well, added to my little rebellious nature, it meant I had even more determination to live my life authentically. I resisted taking up, you know, conventional approach to life. And it meant I went deeper and deeper and deeper into my spiritual nature and spiritual quest. That resulted in me being collected by Tibetan lamas and taken back to Tibet, and ultimately being ordained by His Holiness and undergoing that entire passage, which was extraordinary because up until that point, I had been so alone in that the experience of that scale of awareness of spiritual being. And so the opportunity to be with the Tibetan Buddhist fraternity was a time of such grace for me. It enabled me to take a breath and to sink into and integrate even more layers of awareness and beingness and my unique nature and expressions and the wisdom that I was in touch with and how to live that and be that in the world. So then I ultimately realized or recognized within that passage that I had made a vow in my previous incarnation that I would not hold on to a lineage or a hierarchy, and that I would work in service of the universal consciousness. And so I left the fraternity with deep gratitude, but I realized, no, I'm not meant to maintain a singular identity or lineage in that way.
Mm.
And so, you know, my journey just kept unfolding one layer after the other, deepening and then, you know, reintegrating more of my ancestral connection, connecting more with my family relations, Aboriginal relations, undergoing initiation through my song lines and sacred sites. So there were a lot of things that were knitted back together.
Yeah.
And then in the midst of that, I kept having people asking me over and over and over to please be our teacher, please, you know, hold space or whatever. And I'd resisted that for a long time until I was kind of pushed into that scenario or role, you know. Yeah.
So kind of like you gave into that relationship with the internal world, and then there was a point where it was out, you were out there for other people as well to share what you'd knitted together, what you'd integrated, what
which has just been extraordinary, such a blessing, and so profound to share with so many people in such an intimate way, because there is nothing more intimate than coming back to truth and sharing that space of sitting in truth together. You can't get more intimate than that. You can't be more exposed or vulnerable than inviting oneself to be authentic again, inviting oneself into the space of absolutely unconditional love. And everything that gets exposed in that process, that it can be profoundly humiliating. It can be so embarrassing when we're confronted with our conditions and the ego. But the opportunity for us to sit together and hold space and hold presence that is just love, that says, I see you. Yes, here are the conditions, and you are seen, we are seen, we are this love. That's just incredible to be able to share that with so many people.
Mm. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, I feel like you're giving us just the most incredible gift by sharing yourself today in your truth. For our listeners,
it just feels so expansive just sitting in your space. It's just, you can feel there's no ending. It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. I also want to ask a very human question. most of the time, I get emotional reading things.
Yeah.
you know, as a human, we're here because we want to be loved. Where do you find your love? I know you're going to say within or there, but as a human, you know,
Relationships.
Yeah, relationships and stuff like that. How do you, I don't even know what the question is.
It feels like how you shared as a child, like, you know, that observer or and the, you know, the I am presence that you've been from very young. You've kind of been amongst but independent of people. And I guess what you're saying, has there been someone?
Yeah, someone that you've had that's
on a human basis.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. So I guess in describing a lot of these experiences, it does sound like it's, you know, just kind of more expansive or that essence of self. But that's all happened through me being very, very grounded as a human. I haven't run away from being human. If anything, I've taken a dive more and more deeply into it. So I live, you know, I fully live life. I fully explore. To me, all of life is an adventure, and that means I'm human, I'm woman, I am sensual, I am full of love and openness and receptivity to receive and to give. So yes, I've had divine relationship. I've also had extremely challenging, confronting relationship where, you know, it's been a complete surprise for me to be presented with so many of the layers of condition that are disconnected from the love. And it's like, well, here you go. Here it is. Here's the disconnect. Here's the, you know, the opportunity to continue growing through these layers and to see and to understand what these layers are as a human experience. And I would say that oftentimes on the spiritual quest, it seems like a lot of people get lost and sidetracked down that path that they think, oh, it's about ascending and transcending the human experience so that, oh, finally we can be free of the, you know, the wheel cycle of reincarnation. Sorry, I say bullshit to that. Really, because right, we are the totality of creation being its wondrous unfolding. And that is physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. It is form, formlessness. You can't separate those out. And this is how consciousness is manifesting and experiencing itself through these focal points of what we call the individual. So I celebrate fully being the individual. I also recognize that the irony, the incredible irony that we say, oh, we want to awaken, we want to come back to oneness, oh, let's ascend and transcend and let's be, oh, let's be disconnected again then, chap. Dissociation. Our deepest fear as humans is alienation, is isolation. That's actually our deepest fear. So as a woman, as a human, of course, I wish for that greatest fulfillment to share the journey in every way possible. I have beautiful, deep relationships with so many people. Those who work with me have been absolutely extraordinary as my companions in devotion and love and service. My family, who I've continued to grow with, the relationships I have had, and even those, like I say, from absolute divine, where one of the relationships I had, there wasn't a moment of arguing. Everything was in conscious sharing and communion. And then another relationship where this particular man was, he was awake to some degrees, but in that awakeness, he was dealing with all of his unresolved layers of conditions. But we still have the most beautiful, blessed love, even though it came to a conclusion that we didn't continue the journey together. Would I love a man in my life? Absolutely, I would. So I say revel in it. You know, it's why I called my autobiography Buddha on the Dance Floor.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Because whilst, yeah, sure, reawakening to our Buddha nature, Buddha consciousness, brings us grace and freedom and peace and liberation, it's not the end point. The end point is to dance with it, to revel in it, to live life fully, to bring all of that transcendent realization into the world. To me, that's what our awakening is about. It's not about, oh, let's awaken to free ourselves from our suffering and, you know, then we'll be done with this human life. No, it's actually not for the individual, it's for the whole.
Think about it.
Awakening, awaken to oneness, awaken to the all. All right, I'm just going to do that for myself and I'll just tootle off and, you know, go off into the ethers and I'll be all alone as this great big vast oneness. And
a star will be a sparkly star up there. That's so beautiful that you're communicating that, because that's exactly why we created this podcast, is because, you know, it's not that just one way, or it's not this way, or it's not that way. It's whatever way it is for you, that's how it is, and it's ever evolving. Yep. It's not, you'll never get there. You know, it's,
and that's the fun of it.
That's the fun of it. That's the journey, and that's the ride. And it's, you know, and the one thing that I've been learning personally is, I did think that once upon a time that it was all about connecting with source and going up and being free up there somewhere. You know, I didn't even know where that was, but being here but coming home. I'm home now. Through even doing this podcast, I'm learning more about the full grounding back into Earth, you know, and that's exactly where more of the awakening begins, when we go back in.
Yep, absolutely. And it's why, in some ways, I've gone full circle back to my Indigenous heritage too, and I really incorporate that in what I share, because, you know, to me, I can't see something more real than that that ties in perfectly with awakening. Because if we are connected, interconnected with all aspects of self through creation, through nature, through our kin ties, our relationships with soul, with spirit, that we're all part of that same being, and with the cosmic laws, the natural laws, then it's kind of foolproof. You know, we don't even need to try to awaken. It just happens naturally.
And I guess what you just said, it's not trying to be in a different state. It's allowing being in this moment of ourselves is a beautiful. Wow.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like a segue in a way, because into what you do, isn't it, as far as country and how you share awakening with people is taking people out onto country. Is that, can you share a little bit around, because I feel like that's a part of where we could go next with you.
Beautiful. I would say it's one of the things I'm most passionate about, is inviting people into that immersive experience where people get the opportunity to sit on country and apply, you know, a lot of the tools so many people have gained with meditation and self-reflection, etc. But to really integrate that with the direct experience of being still, being in Dadari, being in absolute receptivity on country, in a way that activates us, that doesn't happen when we attempt it in isolation, when we're just sitting, you know, in the corner of our room or in a meditation hall. It's a very, very different dynamic when we come together as community and we're doing that supported by nature and ancestors and spirit, and also from ritual. You know, it activates and stimulates something that's very deep in our DNA as humans. The ritual of sitting around fire is something that every human feels something from. You know, we're all activated by that. The ritual of bare feet on earth, sitting on earth with your back against a tree, etc. It's been proven with science how much that reactivates us. So I do a lot of different events, and I do really try to commit to at least one retreat a year. So there is one coming up in April of 2024, and that'll be in the Hunter Valley region. That's Nyumadji country. So I've also done a lot of pilgrimage, taking people into Central Australia, Uluru, following the song line of my great-grandmother. That's incredibly profound and powerful when we've done that. And for those who can't necessarily physically come along and join in, I do share online as well, and I love to join in with these type of events. And there's also a bit of a portal that people can access if they do want to listen to more programs or pick up a few more tools that can help them deepen their own reconnection. And that's the Awakening Place. You can find that through the website as well.
Yeah.
By Sarah. And then there's the books. There's, you know.
Yeah. Now, just quickly, as you were saying that, it reminded me of a book that I read many years ago that opened me up a lot, was The Newton Messenger Down Under. I'm not sure.
Right.
I've read it a few times now. Have you actually done anything like that yourself?
Well, do you mean write a book like that?
No, sorry. Like go called. Walk about, or being yeah. called to go walk about for a long period of time. Yeah.
I have done it.
Yeah.
And increasingly my soul is saying, hey, you got to free up from all the commitments and, you know, the schedules that I've been holding for quite a long time. I mean, COVID's kind of shook things up for all of us anyway, but I've been increasingly getting that pull to go back into walkabout sabbatical for a more extended period. And I've done that in different periods in my life. You know, I just get the call and I've got to go.
That's so beautiful. Yeah. Wow. If only all of us Listen. Could experience something like that. I know there are opportunities for people, but if we listened and heard that for ourselves to be able to do that, how wonderful that would be.
And the thing is, doing something, for example, like retreat, a lot of people can't manage to unplug themselves and go off walkabout for a month or 3 months or 6 months or whatever. A lot of people can't manage that. They do have too many ties and responsibilities, but you can manage 4 or 5 days very often, you know. So think about the value of even that.
Mm.
And then let's pare it back down even more for those who can't manage 4 or 5 days. Find a day a week. For those of you who can't manage a day a week, find an hour a week. Unplug. Take your shoes off. Sit on earth. Open your heart. Just surrender. Let go of your mind and just be open. Be present. And that is enough.
Wow, that is so, so true and so beautiful. And I feel like that is where we are heading more, where people are, you know, not only awakening to many, many different things, but I think a lot of people are realizing that it is back to those simple things as taking your shoes off, and they're feeling more. They're feeling that, okay, this actually is giving me something. You know, it's not about taking or any of that. It's about what you're feeling. The resonance of that is bringing you more home than we thought. Where we're looking for it in so many other things, and it's as simple as just taking your shoes off and walking on the earth
and speaking into exactly. the earth as you're doing it.
And
I guess one of the reasons so many people are discovering the benefits of that, again, it's because it's empirical. This is proven by science that when we remove our shoes and we stand on earth, we reconnect the entire current of life force with earth. We plug back into, and not that science has proven this part, but this is me speaking from my ancestral awareness and my own direct experience, we literally plug back into the divine field of intelligence. Every bit of intelligence is available to us when we are connected and plugged in. And the thing is, it's not a mental process when we go about it this way. It's not about us trying to resolve anything. It's just about us being where we are and connecting in the right way. You know, a lot of philosophers say, if you want the right answer, you need to ask the right question. And I guess what I'm saying is, if you want the right experience, you need to create the right experience.
Yeah.
And that's it, very simply. It starts with these simple adjustments, and they're so natural. And science has proven, well, it changes our neurological activity, our brainwave states, our physiology. And so the effects are immediate.
And I think that's the, like, science is coming back around too, with more and more expansion in the field of quantum physics and quantum everything, that, you know, science is starting to go, oh, okay, yes, well, actually, this and that, as you just shared. But in this way, could you just share with our listeners, like, we've talked about song lines a few times, and could you just share with our listeners what song lines are, or, you know?
Well, there's different levels of how it will be explained, so I just want to start with that, so that everyone who's listening doesn't feel confused if you hear a different explanation. In general, song lines speak to our relationship culturally, so our mob, our tribe, our clan, where we live, and the connection we have to specific places, sacred sites, the animals, the creatures, the waterways, the rocks, all the life channels, etc. And so the song lines give us a map, and through the song line we know our seasons, the cycles, our relationship with all the different life forms, our responsibilities within our clan and our tribe, where we can travel to, where we cannot travel to. It ties in deeply with our language, and it's this holistic way of tying together information, memory, our part and our relationship with it, and our responsibility to the future. So for me, my song lines keep me deeply connected to my ancestors and the ongoing patterns of life and my relationship to it, in the here and now as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
That's beautiful. I think I have one more one more question around. Oh, actually, I have two questions. So continuing on with modern ancestry and connection to country, for a lot of people who don't identify with being First Nations, how the relationship with being an ally or speaking into mob or feeling that connection with First Nations people. Is there anything that you could share around a safe place, if you like, where people feel that they can step in without being inappropriate or feeling that they're, I guess, being culturally greenwashing, or, you know, those kind of grey areas where people don't feel sure whether they should or could or can connect in a way that is so needed?
Right.
Does that make sense?
I would advise, and again, a little caveat is, you know, I can't advise or guide everyone on, you know, there's no one way, and different people will have their own experience. What I would say is, in accord with our culture amongst all tribes, is the first principle of dadari, which is, in its most basic translation, is deep listening. In its whole translation, it's about total receptivity. And so the first cultural principle is to come with open ears and a closed mouth. So anyone who wants to connect with Indigenous people would benefit enormously from that first stance, is come in ready and willing to listen and learn. And then the connections will show themselves from there. Because when we come in that way, and I come in that way to any country I visit that is not my own ancestral country, to any auntie, uncle, in any other relation, I sit or stand in company, present, pause, introduce myself, and ask questions. I'm open, or I just listen. What happens when we do that, and it's a very human thing, we know as counsellors, what is the job of a counsellor? Not to judge or try to direct or push, but to first hold a space of listening, make it a safe space for the other person to be heard. That builds trust and openness. And so that's the biggest thing that we need now to restore between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people, is trust and listening, just being present, watching, listening and learning to the other is the way to build trust.
Thank you. We can take that bit of advice for
everything,
all relationships and all interactions. That's so beautiful. We are moving on in time.
I've got one more question, and then Joe's going to ask our question.
Yep.
Your name, Isaira, you spoke around being with the Tibetan monks and in His Holiness company. And for me, Isaira has, I instantly feel connected to goddess, priestess energy. Is that a chosen name for you, or is that something?
It was passed on to me as a yogic name. It certainly brings together some of those higher representations, I guess. In fact, I've had so many names throughout my lifetime. Anyone would think I've got an identity crisis. Not at all. I'm just not attached, and there's just so many aspects to being. Interestingly, I found out recently, Isaira is in the Quran, refers to the light realm.
Ah, beautiful.
Yeah.
Lovely, lovely, lovely.
So look, yeah, I love that. And I think the resonancy with the name, as it fits your evolution, your expansion, your journey, is a beautiful thing to embrace, as you said, not to be attached, but to the resonancy is what fits at the time. Yeah, I love that.
That's definitely the case. And I find it fascinating, because a lot of people pass judgment on others when they get a spiritual name, or so, you know, change their name or something like that. But how you just described it is perfect, because we are constantly evolving, and we occupy a different vibrational mindset in different stages of our journey. I know for myself, even from the youngest age I could remember, I so felt like the name I was given at birth just was dissonant to me, my being, my soul. I was like,
who? I'll just put a badge on so I remember. Yeah, wow.
Thank you.
So our last question is quite a big question, and I just want you to go wherever you go will be absolutely perfect. But how do you see the world now, and what do you see next for us?
How I see the world now is a multi-layered kaleidoscope. And what I mean by that is we could look at the world through any given lens in any moment. It is so extraordinary and so overwhelming and so confusing all at the same time. It is wondrous. It is exciting. It is adventurous. It is confronting. It is frightening. It is threatening. It is opportunity. It is transforming. It is quickening. It is accelerating. It is awakening. It is, it's everything. We are in a time where what I see happening is an overlap, if you like, of two primary paradigms. So if we think of one paradigm, like a sphere, being the unconscious, the conflict and the disconnect, and the other paradigm being our true nature and reawakening to that. And it's like we're in the middle, we're in the overlap. And then if we look at it in a more 3D or multidimensional model, we see that there's this spiraling simultaneously of catalyzing awakening and healing and transforming and unraveling and collapsing and corruption and utter depraved ends of the ego. You know, it's like it's all happening all at the same time. And so there's a couple of things happening as a result of that. One is we're suffering the consequences of being malaligned, that generally speaking, at large, we're so malaligned from the natural order of things that symptomatically things are accelerating. More and more people are becoming more sensitive. There is more mental illness. There's more physical illness, etc. You know, there's just this escalation of that. It's like we're living in a toxic soup in some ways.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, that escalation of sensitivity is pushing more and more people to ask questions. And I remember talking about this kind of model principle that I refer back to, and that is that, you know, we come into this world and our disconnection creates conflict, and we seek to appease or resolve that conflict. We create more conflict by, we talked about that before, these substitutes and things that are, it's not authentic or true nature. But the reality is, the further we go into conflict and suffering, the more misaligned we are, and the more misaligned we are, the more conflict we suffer, until the point where it's so much suffering that we start to look in a different way. So suffering is directly linked to awakening. We actually cannot continue to suffer and not awaken, because at some point we seek out, which ironically actually points us back in. And as a result, we start to look in a new way, in a different way. So it's, you know, the universe and its makeup is really, it's foolproof. We think we can, you know, that we're stuck and that there's no hope. But that's only because we're so myopic as humans. We're so short-sighted. We're fixated with ourself and this little time stamp of life and the universe. But we're not even a blip in the scheme of the universe. I mean, you know, what is the, it's been measured now, well, according to where science is at now, that the universe, the cosmos is 14 billion light years in its span.
Wow.
So, like, how do we even fathom that?
Yeah.
And here we are worried about ourselves and where the world is at. Well, of course, because we're being it, having the experience. All I'm trying to do is say, let's keep massaging our perspective on things. Try to stay aware that there's always another perspective we can look at it from, and that when we're in a time of chaos and confusion and things seem really unpredictable, it's actually the invitation to surrender our control and to trust more.
Mm.
And, you know, the more we try to control, the more out of control we become. So I see the opportunity in it all. I see the invitation in it all. That whilst, yes, it's a rough ride and it ain't going to be over in a hurry, you know, there's no golden age. It's just sort of like, snap, we've gone through the lion's gate now, folks, and we're in the golden age. You know, it's not going to just ding happen like that.
Oh.
Look around us. Life creation doesn't happen like that. It is so incremental. So we need to learn paucity, to settle back into the natural order of things.
Yeah.
To be okay with that, to be okay with the craziness and the chaos and the turbulence. Because this is the passage we chose to be in. And there's a reason for that.
Absolutely.
And in the midst of all of that is love. If I as a human, and remember, I'm human, you might think, hang on, well, she's some extraordinary being. She talks about this. Human. I am a human woman. If I, in the face of being murdered, nearly murdered, am able to connect with love, you, in the face of a challenging day, in your car or at the checkout with the checkout chick or whatever is going on, you are able to hold love.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter what we're faced with, we are able to hold love. To me, that's the thing we just need to see that's happening in the world, is it's a cry for love. Crisis, conflict is a cry for love and connection. And the best we can do is draw a circle around ourselves and our immediate field of influence and say, how do I bring more love and connection to this? Or and how do I acknowledge and celebrate the love and connection I am bringing to this?
That's so beautiful. I have a saying when I'm in situations that are challenging, what would love do? And just that moment alone, it can change it. It can change anything.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow.
That's absolutely magnificent. Yes.
There's no words.
We don't have you on a pedestal, but we just fully feel like we've expanded exponentially this morning just by being in your company, Isara, you know, the cellular, the energetic activation
is palpable.
Yeah. And we just can't wait to share you with our listeners and celebrate in the activation and awareness and connection with what you shared with us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's just been an absolute joy to share with you. I love what you're doing. Keep doing it. You know, we're all playing our part. It's wonderful. And we'll see you everywhere and in amongst it somewhere. Be a joy to bump into you again.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You can count on that.
It will happen. We know it will happen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
She comes in my dreams.
Thank you for listening to our Girl Awakening podcast. We are also on YouTube as Girl Awakening. We'd love to see you there with comments on how our guest resonated with you or your own awakening. Please share the love with a like and subscribe while you're there. A blissful thank you to Ksenia Luki, the amazing artist behind our theme song. We will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.